Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the previous speakers. This is a really interesting discussion. What we haven't even looked at is the fact that there is a differentiation between adoption of the rules and compliance with them, and that raises its own questions. So it's a more complicated question than perhaps we all originally realized. I agree with the distinguished chairman that it is always open for the parties involved in a financing to make it a condition that the rolling stock is maintained, dealt with, and in our case, the marking is maintained in accordance with a particular provision. So that will certainly be in the contract. And I have no doubt that binds then the debtor as a matter of contract law, and it will be a condition for the debtor, for sure, that he has to make the undertaking that he has adopted the rules. What we have the opportunity to do here is to provide the creditor with a degree of additional assurance that even if the debtor does not have control of the asset, that the party keeping the asset, having physical possession of the asset, will ensure that the provisions of the rules are adhered to, and that's why the wording in 3.8 is unbelievably subtle, and it's not wording that we invented this year. It was in the original text from last year, but it's unbelievably subtle because it doesn't go to whether the keeper has to undertake to be bound by the rules, although arguably that should be there. But it also deals with the fact that the end result, which is compliance, so it's all very well adopting the rules, but if you don't comply with them, that doesn't really help you as a creditor, that compliance issue is covered as well. So just in terms of the mechanism, yes, the debtor will go to the keeper and will make a request that contractually the keeper is obligated to abide by the terms of the rules to the extent it applies to the keeper. Of course, the better solution is that the keeper adopts the rules itself, and then there's much more security. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's exactly what the overriding creditor would insist on. But then there's the secondary area, which is that the debtor then has to make sure that whether the keeper has adopted the rules in their entirety or whether he agrees just to be bound by certain provisions in the rules, whether those rules are actually complied with, and therefore there's an enforcement issue. Contractually, that would be dealt with between the debtor and the keeper to the extent that there is a contractual relationship between them, but there may not be. And he may have to enforce that through a chain. There could be more than one party downstream. If it is a condition, for example, that the keeper undertakes to be bound by the rules, then that does give the opportunity for the overriding creditor, if he needs to enforce those rules directly, rather than to rely on a contractual chain. So I think the question that was raised originally by the distinguished delegate from Poland is absolutely valid. What is the mechanism? The mechanism, in my view, at the moment, is being stated that effectively it's a contractual mechanism, and maybe that can be made clearer if delegates wish to do that. But there is a second step we could go to, which is to say that to the extent that the keeper is not the debtor, the keeper will be required to enter into an undertaking to adopt the rules. But of course, that doesn't help you either at the end of the day, because at the end of the day, this is a voluntary set of rules. So it can only be enforced contractually unless a state wishes to jump in and make it a legal obligation, which we're not providing for in these rules. So at the end of the day, the answer will always be the same. There will be a contractual obligation in one way or another. And if I was the debtor in this situation, I would be saying to the keeper underneath me, I want you to undertake to abide by the rules, not just to comply with certain bits of it and to make a declaration. And in answer to the question that was raised before about, well, what happens in existing contracts where the contract's already in place? Yes, that can be an issue. In many contracts these days, there are what are called further assurances clauses, where the lessor in our example would be able to go, or the sublessor, sorry, would be able to go to his sublessee and say, look, on the basis of these provisions, I want you to now adopt these rules. But at the end of the day, it depends on what the contract says. No doubt there is an active commercial relationship there. If the keeper is being facilitated to use that rolling stock, then one way or another, there will be scope to urge, let's say, the actual keeper to abide by the rules. And if he refuses to do so, then of course that would endanger the financing. So then the financing just wouldn't go ahead. So there would ultimately be a solution there. So just to go back to where we started, I think it's clear that the debtor can only require compliance by contract. It will have no other right unless a national law imposes that right. And we don't anticipate that in the rules. It is a possibility, but we can't be sure of that. So the compliance by the keeper has to be ensured and enforced by contract. And if we need to elaborate on that a little bit more, we can obviously do so. Thank you.